everyone, and welcome to We Blame Harry Styles, a podcast dedicated to the work of musician, model, actor, and icon Harry Styles, as well as his numerous talented collaborators.
This week on episode 2, we're going to give a brief recap of the news that has happened over this week, and then get into discussion about Fine Line since its anniversary is on December 13th, what our initial thoughts were, how they've changed over time, breakdowns of all the songs, and what we think its legacy will be.
My name is Key.
And I'm Gray.
And what do we blame Harry for this week?
My golden sweatshirt arriving very late in the mail.
See, okay, then I'll say I blame Harry for my golden tote bag not arriving in the mail at all. I'm sure it's coming, but I'm looking forward to it.
Did you have a watermelon sugar tote bag too?
No, I did not. Only the golden one.
Okay.
But clock's ticking. No. It'd be nice to get it before the holidays, but we'll see. But yeah, since it's the anniversary, I'll also say I'll be sappy, and I'll also blame Harry for giving me a wonderful soundtrack to listen to for this whole year.
Yes, it really has been quite a year to have this soundtrack for. I know that I personally listened to this album like 4 times this week.
Yeah, we will definitely be getting into all of our Fine Line thoughts.
Yes, absolutely. But first, do you want to start off with the news and history?
Sure. Yeah. So before we do that, I just want to say, like, our main topic for this episode is going to be kind of a dissection of Fine Line, like a year after it was released. And so if that's kind of what you're interested in and that's what you want to listen to, we will include timestamps in the episode description so you can kind of either fast forward through or just skip the news section for this week. But yeah. So other than that, let's get into the news. So initially, I also want to say that there is a possibility that something happened on December 13th, Fine Line's anniversary. We're recording on December 11th. So if something did happen, hopefully everyone listening and us are enjoying whatever we got, if we got anything right now.
Because we don't know about anything yet, except for, what was it, the Fine Line in 3D sound?
Yeah, the Amazon HD sound thing. I don't know if that's what I really want for the Fine Line anniversary. So we're kind of clowning if there's a documentary, if there's like...
Oh, I'm clowning.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing if anything happens. I hope something does. But if not, you at least have this podcast to listen to. So briefly, some news that happened this week on the Don't Worry Darling front. Chris Pine was interviewed on the Today Show, and he talked a little bit about the movie. He did mention Harry. He said, Harry's a love, if anyone's keeping track. This is the second Don't Worry Darling cast member that has been interviewed that has spoken well of Harry, which, you know, it's a tiny thing. Don't want to read too much into that quote, but just love hearing, you know, other people that I like their work and look up to talk about Harry.
And we also want to say that Don't Worry Darling is on break over the holidays. I think it's December 18th until January. I am personally clowning that Harry will be recording music during that time, but I am known to clown. I am a known clown.
A lot of clowning on this show, I must say, but we love that and we're manifesting. And either manifesting. Way, yeah, hope everybody's going to have a good holiday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hope everybody has a very good holiday. In terms of music-related stuff, so Sarah Jones posted a photograph to her Instagram account of Mitch and Sammy with a guitar and bass. Sarah, she had posted a photograph previously indicating that they were in California. So again, more clowning.
I love that you've written here, clowning question mark? Perhaps. Yeah, lots of clowning. HS3,
I know when I'm clowning, but I really try to be ambitious about it because shoot for the stars and you may hit the moon. Or is it the other way around?
I don't know, but either way, I'm right with you. I'm clowning with you. I'm hoping for new music in 2021.
Okay. And then finally, the Jingle Bell Ball, or the Jingle Ball, perhaps. So that happened on December 10th. The set list, if you guys haven't seen it yet, was Adore You, Golden, and Watermelon Sugar. Hopefully by the time you listen to this podcast, it will be uploaded officially to YouTube, has been uploaded unofficially. I think that Harry sounded amazing.
He sounded so good. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just that he was well rested. Like, he did so many little like note changes. And yeah, I just thought his vocals were really a standout of this performance. And it was really impressive.
Yeah, I thought it was very, very impressive too. When he sang, it was so smooth. It actually made me really think, oh my gosh, I haven't heard him like sing in a while. Like I guess I heard him sing the Cherry bit in the Vogue interview. Really haven't got like new music, new live performances, except for that impromptu performance. I don't know, since what, NPR in March? That was the last one, right?
That's crazy to think about. I think there must have been something else, but I don't have anything that comes to mind. So maybe it was that. Wow.
And then right after, the before times became the after times. Anyway, his backup band was the Free Nationals, featuring as well Maurice Brown, who I think plays with them maybe sometimes, but not always. And then
who was the trumpet player, I believe.
Right, who was the trumpet player. And then Elena Roger and India Sean were two of the vocalists. And I don't think that they always play with the Free Nationals.
Yeah, either. I don't think so either. So that's why we kind of wanted to mention them separately. Yeah, they were all so good. I was so impressed. It grooved along so well. Like, they were just some of my favorite live performances from him. Yeah, I was just really impressed by the whole thing.
How much did you like, "Hi, I'm Harry"? Like, he doesn't say, "Hi, I'm Harry Styles." He just says, "Hi, I'm Harry." I just love that. It's so cute.
And before you said that, I don't even think I noticed it, but truly iconic, I must say.
It is. "Hi, I'm Harry." What other Harry? There's no other Harrys.
The performances were great. Just an awesome, awesome thing to look forward to this week. And I think the anticipation really paid off. They were, they just sounded great. I would love if, hopefully, Harry gets a tour this album at some point. I would love if he took horns with him, because it added so much, I thought, particularly to Golden. I noticed it, but obviously like in the other songs too, like just the backing that they had on that song and all the instrumentation in those live performances was great. So
And I think that's an interesting thing to bring up too, because I know that when they were touring during their little press tour, Nye was doing a lot of the horn stuff on a keyboard, and I'm wondering, when he reforms the band, you know, we don't know if it's going to be the same formation of people, so maybe he will add a trumpet player.
Yeah, that'd be
which
great.
Would be really, really cool. Okay, so now with that said, we're going to move into our main segment.
Yay.
Which is our Fine Line retrospective.
Yes.
So we're first going to do some generals, and then we're going to move into some song analysis one by one, and then we're going to finish it off talking about just some conclusions, some thoughts about the future, just general year-end stuff.
Yeah, I'm so excited to do this. I was looking forward to talking about this so much. Like, I just, Fine Line as an album just means so much to me, and I never get tired of it. Every single song, like, I listened to it today to, like, take notes and prepare for this episode, and I just find it so rewarding to listen to and to give it kind of that in-depth, like, really close look. So I'm so excited to talk about it with you today.
Mm-hmm. And this conversation is definitely going to be interesting, because Key and I had very different initial reactions to Fine Line, I think, and Key took extensive notes about Fine Line when it released. Like,
I love taking notes on stuff. I am a nerd and I love taking notes.
They were like, oh yes, I have it in a notes folder. I have all of my notes about every song in Fine Line. And he was like, so what about you? And I was like, and then I had to go through like old text messages, old posts on Reddit. I had to look at my last FM for like my statistics of like when I listen to things. Some real archaeology has been done for this episode. With that said, what were your expectations of the album going in, Key?
So I don't know if I can quite express like how high my expectations were. So that might give you some context for like some of the things that I'm going to say later. So basically, and we'll get into like our more individual breakdowns of the singles, like when we do the individual breakdowns of the songs. But I will just start off by saying like all of the singles for Fine Line, I think, are amazing. And I was so impressed with all of them. And so having those singles going into the album, I was like, this is going to be like I actually went to Qdoba with a friend, like the night that the album was going to release. And we had sat down and I was like, okay, so I think this album is going to be like the defining album of like this year, of like this generation. Like, I was like really gung-ho about it. My expectations were really high. And it's just because those first few singles were so strong. And I was like, if every song on this freaking album is like this, like, it's just going to be banger after banger after banger. And yeah, that's kind of where my head was at going in.
Yeah, I actually had my head in a very, very similar place. The first song that I ever heard of Harry's was Watermelon Sugar. And it stopped me in my tracks. Like he was saying, all the singles from Fine Line, the initial three, they're so good. And just being hit with them before the album, like the expectation rose higher and higher. When I heard Adore You, I was just like, oh my gosh, it was so good that I was embarrassed of myself for how much I liked it. So yes, I felt owned by the entire universe because I had never seen myself as somebody who was going to be a Harry Styles stan, and there I was. So I went into the album as well with very high expectations.
Yeah, and then so then I think going from there, like, what was your initial listening experience with the album like?
Okay, so I actually... It's really funny because I had been telling Key for a while, oh, I listened to Fine Line for the first time in my office. So through my archaeology, I realized that this was incorrect. And I actually listened to it at midnight on December 13th. I listened to it twice in a row. And then I listened to it once on December 15th. And then I didn't listen to it until January.
That's wild to me.
Yeah, because I thought that the singles, they were really, really strong, and I loved them. And then the rest of the album, like, I think because the album was very front-loaded with the singles, mm-hmm. I didn't really know how to feel about it. So one thing that I will note was the day of the album, I listened to Treat People With Kindness 3 times because I am insane. No, I again, my story had been... it took me some time for it to grow on me. I don't know. No, I was standing from the beginning. So, Key, how about you?
Yeah, so I have such a fond memory of my first listening experience with the album. I will say this. So I was kind of sort of maybe in the fandom at this point a year ago. I don't think I had like a Twitter account, a Harry Twitter account yet. And I had like a couple like acquaintances in the fandom, but I didn't have like really close people that I could just like word vomit all of my thoughts about. So my initial experience with the album was kind of a very on my own experience. So people were listening to it throughout the day, like in the fandom. I think some of it leaked. And then as it came out in everybody's time zone, everybody was kind of listening to it. I waited until it was out in my time zone. And then I actually had a final exam the next day for college that I didn't end up studying very much for because Fine Line was like all I could think about. So yeah, that night at midnight when it came on Apple Music, I listened to it alone in my room with the lights off. And I just listened to it. I think I maybe listened to it 2 or 3 times and I just cried a lot and it was a whole thing. So I, even though it's like it's a double-edged sword, right? Because that like, I have a really fond memory of that listening experience, but at the same time, like I hadn't made connections like I've made with you, like I've made with some other people, especially through Twitter at that time. So I do kind of wish that I could have like freaked out with, you know, mm-hmm. fandom friends about it at the time. And I didn't get the chance, but I get to do that now. Mm-hmm. So it's just as good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I actually didn't have that experience either. I was having, so even in December after I heard the album and it took me some time to figure out how I felt about it. I was still stanning Harry pretty hard, like all through December, all through mm-hmm. November, all through January. But I was doing it mostly alone. I like couldn't figure out how Harry internet worked.
Yeah, stan Twitter can be intimidating if you're not already on it with a social group.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't figure out how stan Twitter worked or stan Tumblr. I had left Tumblr years before and so it's just sort of vibing and like sending messages about Harry all the time to people who did not care and did not want to know and very much tolerated me.
Man, I can relate to that. Yeah.
But like in a very like limited toleration way, like there were definitely some people who got sick of it. So it is nice to be able to have friends now and to talk about it now because I didn't have it back then. So yeah.
So I feel like you've kind of given a little bit of your initial reactions right to it, but is there anything you want to like expand upon in that vein?
So I was harsh and definitely due to the hype and a very specific text message to my friend on December 15th, salty 2 days later.
Is this going to make me mad? We'll get into it.
The issue with the album Fine Line is the singles are so good and so tight that they overshadow the rest of the album, which is 70% a breakup album, which makes sense as they were written way after the rest of the album. And there's so many good breakup songs. You have to knock it out of the park if you're competing with like Green Light by Lorde or Woke Up New by the Mountain Goats. You're so fucking pretentious. That's my commentary on me now.
What a take.
He's very talented at songs about love and lust and general sadness. Just the confessional stuff, not so much.
All right.
Like, I'm going to be reeling over You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. You Don't Have to Say Nothing. Just Let Me Adore You for a while.
A take.
But okay, of note, for an artist that I like that has a hyped album, often not sure how I feel about it right away, including and often especially my favorite artist. So I needed a little while.
Yeah, I think that totally makes sense. I think I probably had a more positive feeling about it after first listening to it. I will read my first tweets that I tweeted about it the night that it came out, which is as follows. Cherry, She Instrumental, Sunflower Volume 6, Kenyon Fucking Moon, Fine Line in all caps. Great album, good job, Harold. Now to sleep and then to take a final exam and listen a million more times. So those are my initial thoughts. And just to like to expand upon that, I do think so. Like I said before, I had such high expectations going in. Like, I think unrealistically high. I was like, if he follows this, like, I was so in love with everything that kind of was prior to the album. I was like, if he follows all of the songs with songs of like a similar caliber, like, this is going to be crazy. This is going to be like the defining album. I don't think after I first listened to it that that's how I felt, but I still loved it. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was a great album. But I think initially I was kind of like, is it like the defining album like of our lives? Like, probably not, but what a great piece of work. And I was still like obsessed with it at the beginning.
I definitely feel like, and we can talk about this later too, but I definitely have the feeling like this is Harry really showing he's gearing up for things, I feel like, with this album. But I guess that goes into our next point very specifically. How has this album sat with us over time? How have our overall feelings on it developed?
So yeah, so like I kind of said, like I was like, okay, love this album. It's a great piece of work. Is it the defining album of Harry's career? Is it the defining album of our generation? Probably not. Now, I have to say, I think my thoughts about that have kind of changed. So Stevie Nicks, right, is like, this is your rumors. Like, that's like her take. I kind of agree. Like, I think that this is going to be Harry's biggest and most defining album? Probably not. And like, we can get into this later in our thoughts about its legacy. But Fine Line has exponentially improved for me over time. And that's with me loving it from first listen. Like, every time I listen to it, I feel like I like it more. And that's the case with almost every single song on it, basically.
I agree. It is crazy. Like, it's one of those albums that really, like, everything grows on you to the point where it's like, am I sure that I like this album even more than I liked it last time? Or am I just, like, telling myself? You know that thing where you listen to something enough and you're like, but is it really that good? But the thing is, like, Fine Line, it really is. It really is that good. I'm often reminded of the Pitchfork review where before the album had, like, the huge smash success, they were talking about, like, this is a Bowie album from somebody who's afraid he's never going to make a Bowie album or some, like,
oh, Pitchfork.
Some really scathing thing like that. And can you just think about, like, taking that review after the year that Harry's had and, like, posting it up next to all these year-end things? It's almost unbelievable how much they undersold the album. And I do wonder, you know, if a Pitchfork reviewer reviewed it again, like, if they would review it the same way, knowing that the reaction to it in 2020 was the way that it was.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think the reaction to it does inform how I feel about it. And I kind of wanted to speak to this a little bit more too when we get into the individual songs. But for me, like, having experiences attached to music also really improves my listening experience. So that, I think, too, is part of why the album's improved for me so much, is because, like, we have some more music videos now. We have live performances. And we have personal experiences. Like, I've listened to certain songs in certain contexts in my life that I, you know, think about now each time I listen to the song. So that is really what helps it improve for me. But yeah, I do wonder if I mean, it's Pitchfork, you know, Pitchfork mm-hmm. is never here to, like,
of course,
give the most enjoyable, positive take in the world. But yeah, I think that what I would have loved, right, I think if we had had a tour, I think that would have, like, cemented this album's legacy in a big way, because I think Harry's so good live, these songs would have been so good live, like, and like I was talking about before, those personal experiences that can really cement songs, like, in your mind. I think having a tour where for months and months he performed these every night and we got, like, these little, like, tour anecdotes, I think would have helped a lot. But in the opposite direction, like, having COVID-19 happen, there has been kind of an effect there too, where I think certain music has kind of been allowed to, like, ruminate in the culture a little bit and reach people in a way that maybe it wouldn't have if we weren't kind of all desperate for joy.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting looking at some of the songs that have gotten popular this year that haven't been Harry. A lot of the music that was put out, you know, post COVID-19 is very dark and depressing, or at least very mellow. Like, if you look at Taylor's two quote-unquote COVID albums, they are very mellow. They're not, like, the contrast to her album Lover, which is very, you know, upbeat. And I do think that people, you know, in these unprecedented times were really searching for some joy, and Harry kind of, he ended up timed really perfectly to a point in time where we needed, like, anything.
Yeah, I totally agree.
His visibility this year.
Yeah, it's never been higher.
Right. Okay, so now we're going to do an in-depth breakdown song by song of initial reactions and how we feel about the songs now. So, Key, do you want to start us off with Golden?
Yeah, okay. I really wish that I could start out on, like, a super high note. But again, I think part of this was because my expectations were so high, and Golden is kind of, like, a more mellow song than, like, maybe I would have expected. I liked it initially, but it didn't stick out as much as I maybe hoped it would for the first song on the album. I have, like, I'm taking this from my notes that I took when I initially heard it. I have written down, like, wish I hadn't heard the chorus already. So I think maybe it would have stuck out more to me if I hadn't already heard that da-da-da-da that was in the, we got, like, in the tour video, like, the trailer for, like, Love on Tour or whatever. We'd heard that already. So I think I didn't love having that part, like, I guess, spoiled. I don't know if that sounds weird, but and I mentioned, like, initially that I thought it would grow on me. So yeah, those were kind of my first thoughts.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard that tour clip maybe. But I remember thinking it was a strong opener. I'm being controversial with you. I remember liking it. I thought that it fit well with the singles. The first four songs of Fine Line, they fit really closely together.
Yeah, I think. Definitely.
How do you feel about it now?
I love it now. Mm-hmm. This is one of the ones that I think my opinions changed the most on. So I didn't dislike it initially at all. I just think it was a little different than what I expected. But I love it now. Part of that is that we have the music video for it, which I really, really love. And so whenever I hear it now, I noticed an immediate difference too. Like, it did grow on me over time, but as soon as we got the music video, like, when I listened to it walking around, I just pictured, like, you know, Italy and all of the awesome stuff that was in the video. And I just think about that now. And now I'm, of course, going to think about the behind the scenes video. And there's, like, so much behind it now that improves it a lot for me. And yeah, it's just grown on me as we hear it more and more. I thought, even after hearing the set at the Jingle Bell Ball with the additional horns on it that aren't in the original track, it's grown on me. So yeah, so a couple things that I picked out just, like, when I was taking notes on it, listening to it again today. I love, like, the song really kicks in, right? Like, after the intro, there's, like, this drum sound in particular that kicks in the song. And I just love that. It makes me dance a little bit each time. I love that it's in kind of a lower register. So, like, most of the song is kind of in a lower register. He's not doing, like, a high belt like he does for a lot of his other songs, which I think is just something that's kind of unique about it and that I really like. And yeah, it's just a groove song. Like, it's improved a ton for me.
It grooves so good. It really does. And the fact that there's two music videos that are essentially just him grooving in Italy, I mean, I'm jealous. So I feel like this song has only grown on me more with time. It really is just so good. I feel like My favorite lines may be atypical for this song because they are really just statements. I just love the way he says, I don't want to be alone. Like, he says it so many times.
Yeah, that's my favorite lyric too.
Oh, interesting.
It's just not what you'd expect. Like, the song is called Golden.
It's called Golden.
And that's such like a sad, like kind of vulnerable lyric. Like, it just is so, maybe that's why the song surprised me so much on first listen, because it is different than you'd expect maybe by the name. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a great lyric too.
Yeah, but like, yeah, when he says, I don't want to be alone, like it is a certain thing where it just like hits you. And sometimes it just hits you at like 3 a.m. that he's just like saying it like a litany. Like, he really wants you to know he doesn't want to be alone. And I'm like,
yeah, oh, that part's great.
It's just not fancy, but it's just the way that he sings it that gets me.
Yeah, it's great.
Do you want to talk about Watermelon Sugar?
Sure. So I love Watermelon Sugar. Loved it on its first listen. I wouldn't even necessarily say that it's improved with time for me, because I just loved it so much from the beginning. I guess, like, I have written down here that it's hard to have thoughts on it because I've heard it so many times. So those are that's like the first thing I wrote down about it when I heard the album. I guess I like listened to it 18,000 million times before the album came out, because, you know, when you just have like two songs before
right.
the album comes out, like, I just had those on repeat so much. But yeah, those were kind of my initial thoughts. I just loved it.
Yeah, this, like I said earlier, this was the song that made me fall in love with Harry. It was the first song of his I remember hearing. It's just like a perfect pop record. I was so mad that it didn't chart immediately. I couldn't figure out why Harry chose to release it in the winter time.
It so all worked out.
It did. It all worked out. And now
he was playing the long con.
Now I feel dumb for not seeing that he was intending to play the long con. But at the time I was like, why would you release it now? Nobody's seeing this. Why has nobody else fallen for Watermelon Sugar? Am I just going crazy? But obviously I was vindicated in August when it went to number one. It's just so, so good. How do you feel about it now, Key?
I love it now. I like took out some specific parts. One of my favorite parts in the song is just when the horns come in, like before the second verse. And then each part of the song, right, there's just more and more instrumentation that's added. So the song for me is like really about the backing. The lyrics, like, obviously, like, are a little repetitive. That's not even a critique. Like, I think it works really well with what the song's trying to do, because it's so much about that building backing track. And then, yeah, my favorite part of the song by far is when the horns come in, like, after the bridge towards the end. And then kind of, like, everything crashes in at once. And I just love that part. I think it sounds so great.
Yeah, it's so good. I didn't understand at first that this was a sexual song. And now
was,
I feel...
It wasn't. There was, like, so, like, SNL cast members, like, posted about, you know, the meaning of the song when it came out.
I only fell for him after SNL, so I didn't know any of that.
Right.
And so, yeah, but I don't know how I missed it with lines such as breathe me in, breathe me out, which is just, I mean, it really is just so sexual, so sensual, really, even more than that. And just watching the video in May, like when, you know, everybody was in lockdown and I wanted to be at the beach, and just seeing him do, like, this was dedicated to touching, I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's a sexy fucking song, I'll say that.
But it's just so good. Like, the instrumentation is so good. Shout out to Mitch Rowland, who really just worked this song. The bass line and the song is so good. There's a cover of the song recently by The Main, which is another... It was an indie band that I like, but they kind
of...
You
got it.
Listen, leave me alone.
We get it. You're cooler than us.
I'm not cool. I listened to them on 8 tracks in 2014. The bass line isn't there. So it's just not that great of a cover, because it's lacking a very special something. So see, I am giving reasoned critiques of pop music.
No, that's definitely true. The bass line is like super key to the song. And yeah, just to give my favorite lyric to kind of wrap this up, like, I don't know if I could ever go without. It's like just such, like, the lyrics in the song are simple, but they're just so good. and it's just so very sexy and just really out there. Like Harry said, like in interviews and stuff, like it's like a nursery rhyme, like the chanting of the song. And so kids love it, which is just very funny to me because of, you know.
Well, they think it's about watermelon.
Adults and what adults think of the song. But yeah, no, you're right. And I love the song. I think it's, yeah. Harry needs a song about oral sex on every album, and check the box for Fine Line, and I can't wait to see what it will be on the next one.
What will it be? Oh, maybe it'll be Medicine.
Unfortunately, I wouldn't count on it.
If he doesn't replace something in the set for Medicine, I'm just saying.
There will be mass hysteria, but... Yeah.
There will be mass hysteria. Okay, so how are we feeling about Adore You?
Love it. Okay, Adore You. Okay, I'll read to you my initial notes. Okay. I love, love, love the song. Have to listen to more. That's my first, those are my first notes. I still feel like I need to listen to it more because you can never listen to it enough because it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's just a fucking great song, perfect single, perfect music video. What a banger. Yeah, that sums it up.
It really is. It's just very, very special. It was actually when I was looking at my last FM account, just looking at my statistics for Fine Line, I was surprised that it didn't end up higher on the list because I remember listening to it a lot when it came out. I sent a text message to my friend about it. I said, so the new Harry Styles single is out, and I regret to inform you that my standing is not over. Opened up the song being like, maybe it won't be that good and I can be normal. And to my dismay, it's so good. Was just sipping my tea.
Begging Harry to be less good just so that we can have dignity.
Yeah, I said, oh, God damn it. It's just everything, just the buildup of it. Like, I feel like the core chorus, it, like, kind of the intensity of the infatuation builds upon itself. First is, you don't have to say you love me. Then you don't have to say nothing. You don't have to say you're mine. And then he's like, I'll walk through fire for you. Just let me adore you. Like, it's the only thing I'll ever do. He really goes from, like, 0 to 100. Like, the beginning of the thought is, you don't have to say you love me. Just let me adore you. Like, it's the only thing I'll ever do. Like, oh, my God. I felt like I wasn't hearing anything like that, like the deep earnestness in music in a very long time.
Yeah, it's definitely an all-in kind of song, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel about it now?
Now, okay, this is my most listened to song this year by kind of a significant margin.
How many?
Oh, I wish I could remember the exact number of times I've listened to it. But yeah, I've listened to it so much. The synth and the bass in the song, fuck, like... They're just so good. Sometimes I wish, actually, that the backing track was layered a little bit more. So, like, sometimes, right, like, in 80s kind of music like this that kind of reminds me of, like, how this song sounds, they, like, take the same instrument and they layer it, like, you know, mm-hmm. tens and tens of times. And especially when I first listened to this song, I kind of was like, the backing track is so good. I wish it kind of almost overtook his voice in parts, like on the chorus a little bit, mm-hmm. Just to mimic that kind of sound. But like, in all honesty, like, it's perfect. That's like such a small little thing. And yeah, it's so fun to dance to. The backing vocals on it are great. Like, what do I even say? It's just a great song.
It's so funny too. My feelings about the song, even though I loved it at first, they've sort of changed. Mm-hmm. Simply because it was the first Harry song I ever heard in public.
Like, yeah, that's so interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so I still remember the first time that I heard Adore You in public. I was at a bodega and I was just like shopping for fruit or something. And on the radio, I was listening to like a podcast or something in my ear. And I hear some faint hint of Adore You. I have these Bluetooth headphones and I took one out of my ear and put it in my pocket. And I was just like, is that Adore You? Do people know that Harry exists? So it is, my feelings have, I guess they're not like less passionate, but they're very much like, I have this thing associated to it now where it's like, oh, this is how people started to know him. This is how people are being exposed, like in the real world, to Harry. This is how they think of him.
What a good intro! Like, I don't think you could ask for a better song to do that. I think sometimes, like, people, because it was an initial single, and I feel this about Watermelon Sugar a little bit too, I feel like people can kind of be, they can kind of forget how good singles are because, you know, people who aren't, like, big fans start to really like them, and, like, there's kind of this complex that people get about it where then they pick, like, less popular songs that they, that are their favorite, and, like, that's fine and everything, but I just think, yeah, Adore You, so good. Mm-hmm. What else can you even say? Great song.
Yeah. Nothing to say. All right, so do you want to move on to Lights Up? Now, Key, how do you feel about Lights Up?
My baby. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. Here are my notes from when I first listened to the album The Night Of. I said, baby, love her. Nothing more to say. She holds a very special place in my heart. The bass appears nowhere else on the album, like that kind of bass in that song, which is interesting. And yeah, that this song means so much to me. Like, I can't even really, maybe we'll do, like, an episode on Lights Up specifically in the future and, like, the music video and, like, all the things that happened with that song. But Lights Up was what got me into Harriet's the first, like, that night listening to Lights Up made me a fan. So that kind of, I guess, communicates, like, how good I think the song is and how much it speaks to me personally. But yeah, the lyrics, I think, are so special. It's such a unique song.
There's nothing else that sounds like Lights Up. Just
yeah,
nothing.
There's not. It fits with the beginning of the album, but it's so unique. I don't even know, like, maybe this is me not being educated on, like, other different types of music, but even just how it sounds, like, outside of Harry, I don't know if I've heard that sound before. What about you?
Yeah, I love Lights Up. It's amazing. I have to admit, like, the first time that I was exposed to it was the music video is already out. So I was definitely half listening to the song and also, like, at the same time, very focused on all of the men in the orgy in the music video. And just like, oh.
How so could you I not guess, be? Yeah.
But to the musical merit of Lights Up, I agree. There's just nothing like it. Like, I put it on and I just, like, you just want to listen to Lights Up again and again because I can't think of whatever else it might be. Like, I wish that it had gotten radio play in October. Like, I wish that, you know, I had heard it in an Uber or something, but it didn't yeah. make it. That's okay.
Honestly, though, like, I agree with you, but at the same time, it almost does make it feel a little bit special mm-hmm. that it didn't, like, become this massive thing, like, outside of everything, like... But yeah, I think it could have had that success.
And he didn't push it to radio on purpose. So, like we said earlier, if we do a specific Lights Up podcast, which I would also really love to do because there's just a lot to do with it, we will talk more about its impact on the radio and about its impact on fans, etc.
And its impact on ourselves.
And its impact on ourselves. Yeah, we have a lot to say about Lights Up, and we talk about it a lot. Now, how do you feel about it now, Key?
Yeah, so musically, I think the intro of Lights Up might be my favorite part of the song. Like, I just love, like, before the bass comes in, like, yeah, the intro is just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. The la-da-da-da-da's, like, I remember watching reaction videos, like, people reacting to Lights Up when it first came out, and, like, that la-da-da-da-da part, like, everybody loves that. La-da-da-da-da. Whenever anybody hears that, they're always like, la-da-da-da-da, uh-huh. and they, like, play it again, which I love. His feral scream in the song, so good.
It is my favorite moment of the song. It's just, it's the chills that I get every time. Like, and especially if you listen to that feral scream, like, isolated, it's just a lot.
Yeah, like, the meaning of the song, like, how he's discussed, how it relates to, like, his own process of self-discovery and kind of questioning things and, like, adding that little that emotional moment in the song, I think, is just really special. And mm-hmm. yeah, everything works together perfectly. The song speaks to my soul. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, as a queer person, like, Lights Up is, like, the perfect intro to Harry. Of course, I do remember, yeah, just that, just being a talking point and, like, everybody freaking out when the song is released and that whole rollout process. And yeah, so that initial feeling of, like, oh my god, like, wow, like, an artist like him is releasing something like this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then to this day, like, now its legacy to me is that it was kind of my intro to him as an artist, and that is very special to me too. And yeah, just I can't wait to hear it live. Hopefully we get to, we definitely will at some point, but hopefully soon we get to. But Yeah, I can't wait to shout shine really, really loud with hundreds of other people.
That'll be wonderful. Okay, so now we've moved on beyond the initial singles. So tell me about the deep cuts. Cherry, how do you feel about it?
I loved Cherry. So immediately loved it. I love the intro to the song. I wrote in my like little notes when I first heard it that I wanted to listen to it again immediately. I did say initially that I thought it would be stronger without the audio at the end, without the voicemail. I guess it's not a voicemail, right? Like he said it was a voicemail, but it sounds like it's just like audio of his ex-girlfriend's voice at the end of the track. I initially thought that it'd be stronger without that. But yeah, I loved it from first listen. I think it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, it is beautiful. The first time I heard it was a bit jarring following the three previous, which were all singles. Again, as I said earlier, pretentiously to my friend, it was a breakup song, and I didn't necessarily think it was that strong. My opinions have changed on that, but yeah, that was my initial reaction. So how do you feel about Cherry now?
Interestingly, I think I feel pretty much the same way about the musical aspect of it. The one big part of how I feel about it that has changed is my feelings towards the audio at the end. I really like it. I couldn't imagine the song without it. I think it does improve the song and it gives it a really natural ending. I also think initially I didn't pick up on how little parts of that audio track that ends the song recur throughout the song itself, which I really like and I think is really cool and like obviously wouldn't work if the track was, if it didn't end that way. So that's like my big part of my opinion on it that's changed over time.
I love Cherry now. Like, I'm super dork for Cherry. Total 180 from my initial reaction to it. I personally, the song, it just makes me laugh because it's so petty in a way that's very, very relatable to me as somebody who's been through breakups and just kind of like knows that petty feeling. And it's definitely like, you know, it's about him breaking up with a girl, but it definitely, you know, it doesn't feel like a heterosexual breakup because he's not a heterosexual person, and it just makes me feel like the particular brand of pettiness that I have felt in breakups, just sort of like, oh my gosh, when he says I'm selfish so I'm hating it, every time I just like have to compose myself for a second because he's just like I'm hating it, and I'm just like
Yeah, that lyric is great. My favorite lyric in the song is definitely, I've noticed that there's a piece of you in how I dress. I just think it's like speaking to like the particular brand of like hairiness of this breakup song. I think it's just like such a special
I do too.
Line.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is a very special song. And like, yeah, I think that's my favorite line too. There's a piece of you in how I dress. I think that honestly, it's cool. I have seen that it's a lot of people's favorite line on the album in general. It really is very strong. All right. So, Key, how do you feel about Falling?
So here is what my initial notes on the song were. Very pretty. I did cry. LOL. But from first listen, it doesn't stick out to me as much as the other songs do on the album. So yeah, so, you know, positive, but not my favorite on first listen. What about you?
I didn't like it. I actually really started liking it when I heard it at the Brits. And I still maintain that the Brits version is superior to the one on the album.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've listened to it, so I'll have to listen to it again.
How do you feel about the song now?
I like it more now. It has improved for me with time. I think his voice sounds really good on it. And let's be real, any song on Fine Line listened to on headphones played really loud sounds amazing. Like, however, yeah, I wish the song and like the sounds of the song built a little bit more. Some of it's kind of samey for me, like it doesn't progress as much as I feel like some of the other songs the album do. I don't love the ending of it, like the da 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 on the piano to end it, like, isn't my favorite. So yeah, I don't think it's a bad song by any means, but I think it probably stands out on the album the least for me.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. That's definitely why I prefer the Brits version, because it adds that extra element. So during the Brits performance, in the before times, Charlotte and Nye were playing on stage with him and they were both singing. And so they added that extra like little oomph of like the two female voices layering with his. I just thought that was really cool. And it really made me like the song a lot more. So the issue was kind of with the mixing. I'm sorry, Harry. I enjoyed the name drop of the Beechwood Cafe. I hope that the Beechwood Cafe is doing all right in the coronavirus pandemic.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's true. I hope they're doing okay, too. Shout out to the Beechwood Cafe.
Shout out to the Beechwood Cafe.
And the Harrys that they all had to deal with that stormed their cafe after the song came out. No, but I agree. I love that line, too. I pinpointed that. I think, too, the song is really strong lyrically. I like the lyrics of the song a lot. And the coffee's out at the Beechwood Cafe, and it kills me because I know we've run out of things we can say.
Yeah,
is like a great line. It's just like very evocative of like, you don't want your relationship to be over, but it just is. And you kind of have to like emotionally reckon with that. Yeah, I think the lyrics are really good. And I also love like there are some kind of like verging on screamy parts of this song, too. Like when his voice kind of, how do I describe this? Like when his voice really strains on some of those like really strong, like belty kind of notes. Like I really like those moments. So yeah, definitely things to love. I know a lot of people really love this song, and like when it first came out, it was like a standout for people. It's not for me, but to each their own.
Yeah. So To Be So Lonely, Key. How do you feel about To Be So Lonely?
Yeah. So initially, it completely took me by surprise. So I think I thought because of the name, it would be kind of like a falling type song, like sad and slow, and then it just totally isn't. I said, I think I really liked it, but we'll have to listen again. So those are my initial thoughts. What about you?
I don't remember what I thought about it initially. So
yeah, so how do you feel about it now?
Well, I love it now. I feel like it's such a really strong couplet with Cherry, which I also love. And I just think that when you take the song apart to its bits, like everything is great too. Like the vocals are just like very light. Like he doesn't press on it. He doesn't press on the emotions too much with his voice. It's very, it sounds funny for a song that's To Be So Lonely, but it's a very buoyant song.
No, yeah, I totally agree.
Which I think makes it have a really good contrast with Cherry, which is like petty and heavy, whereas To Be So Lonely is just this very like buoyant little egg of a song. And I love the percussion on this song. It's so underrated. If you look at the percussive, like if you look at the backing track, there's claps, there's stomps, there's bongo drums, I think.
There's so much instrumentation.
There's so much instrumentation on this. It's just really great. Again, shout out to Mitch Rowland. And I love the lyrics of this song. I love the little half line, the little half rhyme of I miss the shape of your lips, your wit, it's just a trick. There's that sort of thing just all over the song. It's just cute. I love it.
Yeah, it's really cute. Now, yeah, I agree with everything that you said. The lyrics to the song are great. There's like this playful, like, oh, it's not my fault. Like, don't blame me for falling, which I love, like, the parallel to the, you know, the previous track. Like, I was just a little boy, like, and then he's like, and I'm an arrogant son of a bitch. There's like, right? There's this dichotomy between like, don't blame me, it's not my fault, but also like, I'm the worst. And like, but like, blame me. Which I think is really nice. And it fits really well with kind of like the cheeky, yeah, backing track that matches the lyrics.
Yeah,
really well.
It's a very, very cheeky song, which, yeah, is great.
Yeah, I also wanted to pinpoint, so I'm like obsessed with string instruments. Like, I used to play the viola. I guess I sort of technically still do, but like it's been a while, so that's iffy. But I love string instruments. It sounds like a cello in the back of the song, which I think is so sick. And then, yeah, it sounds like maybe at the end there's an electric violin too. I'm not like positive about that, but I just think it's like such a unique little song. And yeah, shout out to Mitch Rowland for this song because you're a real one. This one's really
good. You're a real one. Yeah, it's real good. All right, so She, how do you feel about She?
Yeah, so when I first listened to it, I said the beginning of the song is really good. I don't know if I love the chorus so much. And then I loved the guitar solo, was kind of how my initial thoughts broke down. And then I also pinpointed that I wanted to look more deeply at the lyrics. Because when I first listened to it, I remember thinking, like, there's something special here. I don't totally know what this is about, and it merits further investigation.
I think I was sold so much on the concept that like this was an album that was all about his ex-girlfriend. So I thought initially that she was just another breakup song, which was not.
Yeah,
I don't think that that's what it's about. And so definitely, yeah, because I don't believe that that's what it's about anymore, I definitely feel differently about it. I don't feel like it's an album full of breakup songs anymore. But yeah, it does vibe very hard. And I do remember vibed very hard. How do you feel about this song now?
I would say, so I kind of have two like schools of thought on it. One is that I love the song, especially the lyrics. So the lyrics kind of take the forefront for me here. I just think there's so much that we could talk about it. Like, we're not going to get too deeply into it now, but yeah, the lyrics are definitely the standout for me. The bass in this song kills. Like, the bass is so good. And then, yeah, I don't know if I love the falsetto on the chorus so much initially, but, and if we do get into the meaning of the song a little bit soon, I think the falsetto, like, is on purpose. And I think the falsetto plays into the song and the lyrics and what the lyrics are saying. So that improved that aspect of it for me. I love how extra it is, like how long it is, how long the guitar solo is. The extended guitar solo might be my favorite part of the song. But the other aspect of my feelings about it is I don't actually listen to this one that often. I think because it's so long, there's so much of it. It's like there's a lot going on. It's like pretty intense musically. It's just not like a casual song that I like reach for a lot. But yeah, I love the lyrics and especially that aspect of it.
He is like, I don't want to have a breakdown at the supermarket, so I'm not going to listen to She There.
I do have a very specific memory. So like I had like a 6-month internship starting in January of last year. And so I had like a long commute. I had an hour long commute on the bus, and I would listen to the entirety of Fine Line when I went to work and when I came back from work on the bus, basically every day for like a few months. And I have a very specific memory of like listening to She while I was on the bus and like, you know, feeling some feelings and rocking out to it and looking out the window and having thoughts. But but yeah, yeah, not a casual listen, at least for me.
I will just vibe to She in my house. Like when I'm in my socks and cooking dinner in the microwave, I will listen to it when I'm writing. And it's just, yeah, it really does vibe. You know, after Sign of the Times, it's shocking that She, the 6-minute song, did not get released as a single.
Wow, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. No, Sign of the Times, it's interesting that you mentioned that. And maybe this is what where we can get deeper into the meaning, or at least what theories behind the meaning of the song. I think Sign of the Times and She are like sister songs. Yeah, I think they have a lot in common. And maybe there's an opportunity like for future episodes for more discussions about the parallels between the two. But they both have, there's like a lot of metaphorical language and like metaphors in the songs. And like he has talked about how Sign of the Times is like from a mother to her child, right? And like She, to me at least, and there's been a lot of discussion about this, like if you look at the Genius lyrics for the song, this is the first thing that comes up. So it's not like we're reinventing the wheel or like coming out with some crazy theory here. Like a lot of people vibe with the interpretation that this song is either about gender, whether that's identity, whether that's expression, femininity, like some aspect of that. And that is what kind of this song speaks to. And I love that interpretation. When I first heard it, it immediately clicked for me. Like I knew, on first listen, I was like, there's something more here. There's an opportunity to delve more deeply into what these lyrics mean. And then once that occurred to me and I saw people talking about that, I was like, that's what it is. Like, that's what this song is about for me. It just puts all the lyrics into context for me. Like if people prefer different interpretations, obviously that's fine, but to me, like when I read the lyrics, I'm like, wow, that clicks.
I saw that interpretation for the first time in a YouTube comment, and so that's when that's where my first understanding of She came from, was in some random YouTube comment, probably on She, but like, you know, it might have been elsewhere, but it really did just like, oh, okay. My thoughts on She and gender are really complicated. Like he said, you know, if we get a chance to breathe, we probably will be doing an episode at some point that's a comparison between Sign of the Times and She. But yeah, those are the we have similar, a little bit different, but we have similar feelings about the relationship of she to gender and heterosexuality and all that good stuff. So my favorite line in the song is she sleeps in his bed while he plays pretend, so pretend. And he does like the whole thing with his voice just goes so pretend, like he's whispering, and I'm like, oh my God, what is that up with? So
yeah, it's a great moment in the song.
Yeah. So next, Sunflower. How do you feel about Sunflower, Key?
I love it. Loved it from first listen. I've written down here for my notes, oh, surprised me again. So good. I think it was. So the back half of the album did surprise me a lot. I think because a lot of the singles are more like pop rock. Like there's like synths. There's a lot of like all those kinds of sounds that aren't as present. I guess that's ironic because like there are some of these sounds in this song specifically. But the back half of the album, it does have a different sound. And that did surprise me. But even though I like love the single so much, that's almost kind of more similar to the music that I just tend to listen to, like outside of Harry, just like in my everyday life or whatever. And yeah, so I love this song. Yeah, I knew from the beginning that hearing like the boop boops at the end were gonna be so fun to hear live, and I loved it. What about you?
I don't remember having a huge first impression of this song, which is crazy because it's so good. But I do remember before I even knew that many people, Elton John was calling for it to be a single. That was in the before times, right?
Yes. Wow, taste.
Yeah. So Elton John in the before times was calling for Sunflower Volume 6 to be a single, and I was really obsessed with Elton John at the time and still am. But Stevie Nicks thought so too, and so I mean, I'm inclined to agree if the year was like 1975. Sunflower Volume 6 is hands down the greatest hit of 1975. I guess, what are your thoughts about it now?
Yeah, so I'm obsessed with the sound of the song. I love, there sounds like, I don't know exactly what it is, it sounds like a high keyboard sound that's in the backing track that I'm like obsessed with. The I couldn't want you anymore, kiss in the kitchen like it's a dance floor, I'm obsessed with that part. The lyrics, but also just like how it sounds, like can I sing it, will the podcast be taken off, I should do that, like the da 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 da, like that part canceled. Of it I love. Oh God. But yeah, and I meant to say this too for To Be So Lonely, right? Because that's the song where there's this sound of like a candle being blown out or a match being blown out, something there. And in this song, like there's a big gasp before a couple parts, like before your flowers just died and like a couple other little moments. Little moments like that make this album for me. It's like so detailed and like these little things that like reward multiple listens and like, yeah. So little things like that. Truly, where is Stevie Nicks' suggested music video.
Oh, I just want that music.
Harry, you politely rejected her idea, but I think we all need a music video of bees dancing around to the song during this time. So where is it?
He politely rejected her music video about a sunflower and a bee in love, but was like, it's more logical if a boy and a fish is in love.
I'm here for both of them, but yes, I see what you mean.
I'm just like, Harry, you can just own up. You know that you want us to see your pretty face in a music video. That's why you turned down Stevie Nicks. I'm just saying.
Wow. Call out. Calling out Harry Styles on this podcast.
Calling out Harry Styles on the We Blame Harry Styles podcast. Well, we do blame him. What I think is so cool about this song is I've done like probably too much extensive research into this song, and its origins are really a bit shrouded in mystery. Like we don't know the recording studio that it was recorded at, the person who wrote it with him and like recorded it with him. He's never recorded with before or since, but I mean, he has like the guy he recorded it with has this cool like very like 60s series of albums. But he's never really talked about this song in interviews, and it's just so good. And I just want to know more about this song, but like the mystery behind it, I just find this song to be so mysterious. Like, where did Sunflower Volume 6 come from? We don't know when it was recorded, in contrast to like every other song. I think that maybe it just popped into existence and he was like, yeah, I wrote that.
Love that.
I also like gasped, your flowers just died. I also have a personal connection to Kiss in the Kitchen, like it's a dance floor. You know, in my youth, one time,
I had youth. You're not old. I just want to say that.
I'm not that old, but I do mean when I was, I'm a little old. It was 12 years ago when I was a teenager. So when I was a teenager, I danced around with a very handsome boy in his parents' kitchen when they weren't home. And so I know I really could get it. so that definitely resonates. That line resonates with me.
I love that.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to Canyon Moon. How did you feel about Canyon Moon?
Well, I just want to lead off by saying that I am Canyon Moon stan numero uno. I love it so much. From first listen, I loved it so much. My mom is a Canyon Moon stan, so it's like in the family. It's my mom's favorite song off of Fine Line. Yeah, I cried when I first listened to it. Like, I just remember, you know, sometimes just smiling really wide but also crying. Mm-hmm. Like that was the vibe mm-hmm. when I first listened to this song. I just love it. It's just the best.
Yeah, it's great. It's so quality start to finish. I remember early on from listening to this song, maybe not day one, but very early, I was like, this would have been the hit single of like the Mumford and Sons band era. Like if this had come out in like
acoustic.
Right. Like, yeah. If this had come out 2012 to 2014, this would have like debuted on the top of the charts. And so I mean, I love it. That was, I was young during those years, younger than I am now. I'm not ancient now, but I was younger and very into that era of music. So I always want other people to be Canyon Moon stans.
Me too. It deserves better. I'll say that. It deserves more streams. I can't help but smile whenever I hear it. It's pure happiness. I love like the little, like, I just think the lyrics are so good. Jenny get the kids from school, like how that just comes out of absolutely nowhere. Like I remember reading reviews of the album and someone mentioned that they were like, and Styles is imagining a future life of domesticity because they didn't know that Jenny was Kid Harpoon's wife. So I just love little things like that. And describing something we can all relate to, which is like remembering a good time and like mm-hmm. knowing you're on your way back to somewhere and just like waiting for it and anticipating it and looking forward to it mm-hmm. so much. The I'm going, oh, I'm going part. Literally, what's better than that? It's just the best thing in the world.
I feel like Canyon Moon is a very interesting song because it feels like nostalgia for two places at once, right? He really wants to go home, but he's also remembering the time under the Canyon Moon. Kid Harpoon, you know, is located in Los Angeles, and his home, when he's discussing the way that he's touring, if you kind of do a little sleuthing, a little tracking, he's insinuating that London is also his home. This is very much Harry between two homes, nostalgic for both. And I think that that's very, very, a very specific feeling, a very liminal feeling. I find that this is like a perfect kind of road trip song. I wish that this would be I wish this would be in like some like lesbian road trip movie. Like I feel like that's the perfect song for that.
Yeah, if we were, if alas, I mean, there are multiple reasons why this is not occurring, but due to COVID especially, if we were following Harry on tour, yeah, let's blast this from the car stereo and roll it right along.
I just think the song is so tight. Every line in it kills and like it just keeps going and, you know, it goes until it ends, basically. I just can't find any flaw in this song. It's just so good.
Which, and again, not everybody thinks that. And like, again, everybody has their own opinions. It's like a little bit of a different song, like genre-wise, than some of the other songs in the album. So I understand that. But yeah, just come on, guys.
Come on.
Scream Canyon Moon.
Come on. How can you not love Doors Yellow, Broken Blue? Come on.
Yeah, love that lyric.
So treat people with kindness.
Okay, let me intro this, okay? So we just did the song that I'm feral for. Now let's get to the song that you're feral for. No. Give me your initial thoughts on Treat People With Kindness.
Okay, so I like the song from the start. And I'm trying to remember the headspace that I was in listening to it multiple times that day. I think that I had heard in a review, like somebody had reviewed it as, wow, Treat People With Kindness is really feral and I'm scared. And so I'm pretty sure that I listened to it and I must have been like, wow, Treat People With Kindness is feral. I am a little scared. But I got like excited about it.
Oh my god.
That must have been the mood, because that was the only one that I listened to that many times that day.
So funny.
But yeah, it's just a very interesting song indeed. How do you feel about it now? Or, well, I guess, how did you feel about it back then? Because we started with me.
So my initial notes read as follows. The only song in the album that I think there's a chance I won't listen to very much. I think it will be super fun live, but it makes me cringe a little bit, but in a nice way that's endearing because it's Harry, and of course Harry would release this song. So nobody cancel me for being homophobic, please. Okay, I know it. I just want to get this out there. Harry himself said that he kind of loves it, but also kind of hates it. He said that when the album first came out. So it's not just me, because that was very much my headspace initially.
That's the correct attitude to have about the song. Like, you have to, like...
You really have to give into it and buy into it. And you're not always in the right mood to, like, buy into it. But when you are, it's the best.
Sometimes I have to listen to it to get me in the mood for it. I will listen to it when I think that there's no hope, honestly. Okay, so I am very feral for Treat People With Kindness. It actually surprised me how feral I was for it, because I didn't think that I was listening to the song as much as I had. I had assumed that on my wrap-up, like for Spotify, that my second most listened to one after Watermelon Sugar, which was my first, would be something like Canyon Moon or, you know, like it's one of the more normal ones. And no, it was this one. And I really had to assess my life. But since my Spotify wrap up, I've been listening to the song like even more. I'll just listen to it on a loop. It's just like, I don't know. There's something very, very special about it. There's certainly for me, there's nothing that sounds like it. And at the same time has the same message. Like, it obviously has a lot of DNA shared with the Beatles, Oblah Di, Oblah Da. Like, there's no denying that. But Oblah Di, Oblah Da is not about being homosexual. Like, I wish it was.
Yeah, like, let's say this right out. This song is for the gays to wave pride flags to.
Right.
Like, at the end of Harry's set on tour. Like, that's what it's for. And
right.
I love it for that.
Yeah, it's definitely, that's how it's designed. And I just feel like, I don't know, there's definitely a lot of quote-unquote, like, woke gays on Twitter and other social medias who just are not on board the Harry train yet. And I just feel like, how can you... He has a song that says, if we're here long enough, we'll see it's all for us and we'll belong. You're depriving yourself of that. Every time I listen to that, I just, like... believe maybe that it's true. Like, you have to sit there with Treat People With Kindness, and like the trick to Treat People With Kindness, I'm going on my little rant, but like the trick,
please do, I'm loving this.
The trick to Treat People With Kindness is like, you have to listen to it and then you have to listen to it again, and you have to be like, he believes like 110% what he's saying, or he at least like is trying to convey how he feels when he believes that. You know, like, I know that it's not a permanent feeling for everybody, and probably not a permanent feeling for him always, which is probably why he hates it sometimes. But
there's this hope, right? Like, even if you aren't always in that place, like my favorite lyric in the song is maybe we can.
Right. It's maybe,
because it's maybe I hope we can.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to try and give it to you.
Right.
Through this song.
Oh, it's, you know? Just, yeah, it really, when he's saying, like, maybe we can find a place to feel good and we can treat people with kindness, I just feel like you have to really sit there and believe, oh, like, he really, really believes not niceness, but, like, kindness, like, this sense of selflessness and this giving and, like, this joy that we can come to when we are kind to other people, like, genuinely kind to other people. It's just something that you have a radical earnestness for, which is a little heavy, but I guess that's just how I feel. Like, what better song to write to literally like wave pride flags to? Like, that's what gets me, right? Is he, when you look at the only set that he was able to fly pride flags at in London, because he wasn't able to do it at the Forum, unfortunately, you can see that it's the place in his set that he set up for to wave the flags. Like, that's That's his time.
Yeah, I love that
for,
so much.
For flag waving. And he wrote it specifically this way, like with the women singing back up, so that he could have the time to dance around and like wave flags. And there's something like so beautiful to me about that. We can definitely move on from this song. I realize I'm going on a long.
No, I think I love that you are. I think it's great. I want to clarify too that my thoughts about this song have changed a lot over time. That I do unabashedly love it now. I feel very similar to you about it. I think it makes sense that people kind of have a hesitation about this song because it is. It's like, it's kind of cheesy. Like, it just is. Like, but that's great. And yeah, I love how you articulated like your thoughts on that.
Well, now we'll move on to Fine Line. How did you start off feeling about this, Key?
Wow. So this is probably the most explicit my initial first listen notes get. I said, and I quote, "Fucking incredible. Amazing. Spreading you open is the only way of knowing you. That lyric fucking took me out." Okay, we're earning the explicit rating on this episode here. "Then the instrument at the end, brilliant. What a fucking way to end the album. God, he really did that. Beautiful. I cried." This is a key song where the production like stands out so much. And yeah, that was kind of my first thoughts on it. I was blown away by it the first time that I listened to it.
I didn't get the song at first until two things. One, I listened to a cover of it with the sound of rain gently falling, and two, I saw it set to the end of Call Me By Your Name. That was that was early enough into the listening and re-listening process that I can say were my official feelings on it, especially because it's the last song on the album, which is a lot to process. So I would say that my initial reaction is really based on my feelings in reaction to those two videos. And once I had that experience of listening to it in those settings, I was like, oh my gosh. It's definitely a complicated song.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you feel about it now?
I love it. Mm-hmm. I think, like, I guess I'll say now, since this is the last song of the album, I feel like I've waxed lyrical about so many of the songs in this album. I think my top three, God, this is hard to say because Adore You is like really edging up in there, but mm-hmm. Canyon Moon, Lights Up, and Fine Line to me mm-hmm. are my holy trinity. I think because of how special they are to like me personally. And this song, for about the first month and a half after Fine Line came out, I did not listen to it once without crying. Every single time mm-hmm. I listened to it, I cried. It just, the way... What I think stands out to me the most is that the song is given all the time it mm-hmm. needs. It builds up exactly in the right way so that it earns the ending. I think if the song was shorter, it wouldn't earn it. Mm-hmm. The build up is so mm-hmm. perfect. The horns like first come in this subtle way, and then like each time there's like a new verse or chorus, like something new comes in. His voice sounds great on it, like starting with kind of like the soft falsetto, like when the strings come in, like it's just, mm-hmm. yeah, every single time something's added, it makes such a difference. Like, and then of course, like when the fucking drums come in mm-hmm. at that part on Will Be a Fine Line, like, I don't know. I just like, I'm like babbling because
it's amazing. Yeah. It's just great.
It's great. Like when Zane Lowe said, when Harry did that interview with Zane Lowe for Apple Music, before the album came out, he said, like, this is, like, one of my top songs of the year. Like, it stands out to me so much. And so my expectations were high, and it was so different from what I thought it would be, and it was better. When I listened to it again today, a year after the album came out, I cried again listening to it. It's just so beautiful, the healing energy of just ending the album on that will be all right message is so powerful. And I not to get like too deep into it or whatever, but I had like a really, around the time that COVID-19 happened, I was going through like some family stuff at the time, and like my grandmother died earlier this year around the time that COVID-19 happened, and I couldn't like be with my family at that time. I was away at school, and I just remember listening to this song and like just hearing him say that again and again and again underneath that part just saying, like, we'll be all right, we'll be all right, we'll be all right. Like, when the world, like, was crashing down, it was like, I can't totally articulate my feelings behind it, but yeah, man, is this a special song for sure.
Yeah, it's very special. I mean, I think that my review of it definitely, it's going to be hard to top Key's review. But I definitely find a lot of similarities between this song and Sign of the Times, which I've definitely had comfort me in many dark hours. I feel like there's definitely something to be said for, you know, they do kind of mirror each other, right, with this promising that everything will be all right. He always is very, you know, he brings hope, but it's in this cautious way. Like, he wants you to feel comforted almost before him. He wants to believe the comfort that he's giving. And I just feel like, you know, he wants me to let my feelings out, but also he wants to tell me that it's going to be okay. It's just, it's what I like to call Harry Styles' mother goddess energy.
Totally.
Definitely some real Harry standing in the plant Tim Walker shoot mother goddess vibes going in this song. And I just, I feel like I want to be on that journey to becoming all right with him when I listen to it. And, you know, I think there's definitely a theme in this song, too, like, we'll be a fine line. It's very much, you know, we'll be all right doesn't necessarily mean that everything is going to be all right. Life is going to change and not everything is going to be great. But at the end, he's hoping that it all work out.
Yeah. And that's that fine line, too. The different emotions that he talks about in the song.
Yeah.
It's this acceptance of the good and the bad, of. Mm-hmm. You know, the sad and the happy of all these different conflicting things. And it's not shutting it out. It's, yeah, like that acceptance of it is something that's really special about it.
I guess my question here is, so when he was talking with Variety about the sequencing of this album, he said that you listen to it on a loop and hopefully it, like, it makes sense as a circle. How do you feel about this song in relation to, for example, if you listen to it back to back with Golden, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I almost think that my reaction to Fine Line is too emotional to do that. But that could be a personal thing, too, because I love to sit in things. Like, if I watch a sad movie, like, I'm the kind of person where I want to sit in that. I don't want to leave that headspace and do something else. That's, like, not really how I operate. So I think maybe it is a personal thing, but I think it's the perfect album closer. Absolutely perfect. And so I don't tend to go in and listen to Golden right after that. But I will say this, I think sonically that does make sense to me because of the way that Golden comes in. I think that it would sound good. And, you know, and I think it would make sense for people to do that, to listen to Fine Line and then listen to it all the way through again and start from Golden. But personally, it's not something that I tend to do that much. What about you?
I have listened to Fine Line, the album, on a loop several times before. And I do think that it flows neatly in a circle with it. Definitely starting and ending both with these questions of aloneness and, you know, not wanting to be alone and trying to figure out how to be with yourself, I feel are very much themes in both Fine Line and Golden and throughout the album. Yeah, so I guess one more question that I have before we wrap up about Fine Line's legacy. What is your opinion about how he said that this album is about having sex and feeling sad? How does your review reflect upon that statement of his?
Wow, that's so interesting. I definitely think a lot of the songs are about that. I think a lot of the songs are about things that are very complicated that I'm sure are very difficult to instill into a small witticism to say on a nighttime talk show. But I think a lot of the songs on Fine Line are really sad, even the ones that, like we kind of talked about, the some of the lyrics in Golden, some of the ones that you might not think are about that, I think speak to some sort of sadness. I think that might be kind of what he feels sums up the period in his life that this album in particular is about. And I think it's a great little little thing to sum it up, but kind of like what you said before about how like Zane Lowe was saying, this is really a breakup album and not all of the songs really speak to that. It's hard to distill it all into one little clause of a sentence because there's so much in there.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. Okay, so what do we think Fine Line's legacy will be? What can this era tell us about the future of Harry's career?
I actually, do you want to start with this thing that you've put in the outline here? Because I think that's such a good place to start.
Yeah. So I follow this YouTuber, Todd in the Shadows, who is a music reviewer. And he posted up this tweet that made me think a lot about Fine Line's legacy. There was a Pitchfork review recently that brought up the concept of a Verge album, the album that gives the artist the momentum to become the biggest thing in the world on their next album, e.g. U2's The Unforgettable Fire. I put this tweet into our little organizational document because I feel like that's what Fine Line is for Harry. I feel like this, he is on the verge of the biggest thing in the world. Like, I feel like Fine Line is that for him.
Yeah, I to a certain extent, I agree. I think I definitely would have said that initially, like in the months after the album came out. And I definitely think that this is a Verge album in that sense. There's like a sense of climbing that there's like so much work that's been done. Like this album was nominated for 3 Grammys. Like he's done a lot of work to kind of overcome these preconceptions that people had about him. And like for better or for worse, like I think a lot of those preconceptions are unfair, but he has overcome them with this album. He's had radio hits that have really opened his career up to the wider public and his music up to the wider public. That being said, if we had had kind of like a normal, you know, he tours it for a super long time, I think that also would have kind of spoken to the significance of this particular era. Like, let's say that he releases music soon-ish, you know? Let's say he releases music before he goes on tour for Fine Line. I almost do think that what would have really cemented its legacy is kind of having that period of time to really solidify it and having months of touring and like really ending it with that. And now that it's uncertain whether we're going to get that, I do wonder kind of what impact that has on kind of the legacy of this era, since it seems to kind of be wrapping up now. At least it feels that way.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's interesting because I have seen a lot of posts talking about like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that I have my Love on Tour tickets because he's going to start doing stadiums next. And
we're
never going to be able to see him at arenas again. Obviously, I have Madison Square Garden privilege living in New York City. But yeah, I personally believe that this is a Verge album. In the idea, I feel like in his next era, Harry is going to really become like a household name, like Taylor Swift or like Beyonce. Like, you're like, I mean, obviously our moms know who he is, but like but like regular people, if you just go up and you don't have to be like, oh, he's the watermelon sugar guy. I feel like we were talking yesterday about Taylor's COVID albums. I hope that doesn't sound impolite. They've just been released in this era. But Folklore and Evermore, Evermore's the one, right?
Yep.
And about how she is able to just sort of drop an album, and the dropping of the album is the advertisement for it.
Yep. Same with like Beyonce. Same with like some other
right. Same with Beyonce. Like these artists who are at a certain level in the public consciousness, like they can just drop the album, and that's the advertisement for the album is Beyonce suddenly dropped an album.
Right.
I don't think that Harry Styles among the general public is quite there yet.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like that's not going to happen until like maybe HS4, because I'm obviously manifesting many HS albums. But I feel like that level of stardom is yet to come for him. And so that's why I feel like Fine Line is a Verge album, because I think that there just needs to be like the one more push, and then he's going to be like a Taylor. Obviously for me, he is, you know, the person that I stan, but that's why Fine Line feels like a Verge album for me. How do you feel about this era for the future of Harry's career? Because I don't know, I feel like when I listen to Fine Line, even though I think it's amazing, it's like it's so incredible. I still can see different parts of it where Harry could grow. And I definitely have a lot of thoughts about like what HS3 might look like and how it might be different than Fine Line. Do you have thoughts about that?
Yeah, I do. I think it all depends on what the next album sounds like, right? So for me, a big part of the reason too why Fine Line is so iconic is not just the songs, but is everything along with that. So like the singles all being amazing, like obviously helps a lot. The cover art of it, I think like weirdly has a huge impact on how I think about it and how I think it'll age. Cause I think the cover of it, the Tim Walker photo shoot,
it's so iconic
in like a very kind of old school, like we will remember this album cover kind of way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to really help cement its legacy, is like all of the extra things outside of that. The Fine Line outfit on the cover is like, everybody knows what that, like not everybody, but a lot of people know what that outfit is, right? It's become kind of an iconic symbol. So all those things I think contribute, but yeah, it all for me depends on what the next one sounds like. So I think, let's say he just takes a complete left turn, releases music in 4 months, and it's like a country folk album. Like he could do that.
He could.
It might be his quarantine music or whatever. I could totally see that happening, and I'd be very here for it. I don't think that would have the same effect that you're describing, where like with the growth that we've seen in this era, even just from his social media engagement, where every one of his tweets now is getting 1 million likes, which is insane. To me, it seems like there's kind of a natural progression here where like if he goes away for a little bit and then comes back and drops something with the strength of the singles of Adore You, something that's different, but that's kind of in that vein, that to me in like kind of a pop or pop rock direction is like what would have that growth that you're describing. I think regardless, like his next effort's going to be successful. Like the insane increase in success has proven that. But yeah, I think it all kind of depends on what the next one sounds like.
Yeah, that's what I feel like too. I feel a lot of excitement for HS3, you know, Lights Up and Adore You and Treat People With Kindness were the last songs written, and I like all that music. So if that's what's more to come, it's very exciting. But obviously we do not know what Harold has in store for us. So with that, I think that closes out our discussion of the main segment. So now, Katie, you want to move on to some nonsense?
I'm always here to move on to some nonsense.
Okay, so we will put links in the description for the timestamps for this, but this is our nonsense section called Must Get Rid of Toxic in Community, where we drag some people, not any named individuals.
Just some annoying nonsensery that we've
just
seen
some
in the
annoying
past week.
Nonsense. So the unofficial upload of Harry's Jingle Ball performance has obtained a number of comments at this point. Harry, they claimed, is overworked and very unhappy. So wrote one person, why he isn't smiling. Where is the spark which is always in his eyes?
So dramatic.
He didn't even painted his nails. What happened to Harold?
You noticed the grammar things until you read it out loud, and it makes it so much better.
Oh yes. He didn't even painted his nails. What happened, Harold? What indeed?
People are so strange.
Oh, they are so strange. Another person said, and keep in mind, this one has 94 likes. And I'm bad at not laughing, but they're just too funny. So, okay. I don't care what you antis are saying.
Here
this
we
man
go.
This man doesn't look himself these days. He isn't the happy, full of energy Harry we are used to. He has got something on his mind. You can clearly see it from his eyes, and he barely smiled in whole the performance. Stop saying we are babysitting him. We love him and we care for him. That's why we are doing like that.
Oh, God.
So I'm saying it again. Harry isn't himself lately, and that makes me really sad. I don't know why, but I really hope he will get through. And I hope that he knows we will always be here for him.
This,
94 likes.
This faux concern I find so annoying.
It's so weird.
Like,
stop
shut
it.
Up. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the amount of times he smiled in this freaking performance, he could literally, because you know if he smiled a lot, they'd be like, really concerned. Harry's smile looked fake. It seems like he's faking being happy. Like, shut up.
I know. It's crazy.
It's so weird. Like, just let, like, especially because a lot of these people were around for One Direction when this man was in a band putting out an album a year. Like, just let Harry communicate the things he wants to communicate and don't be talking about the spark that you think is gone from his eyes. Like, I mean, you have free speech, but like, oh God.
But he didn't even paint his nails. So how do we know if the spark is there? What happened, Harold?
You can't see my eyes rolling, but they're really rolling up. I'll say that.
So now that we've gotten that out of the way.
The Jingle Bell performances were great.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was great. Ignore these people. They're not worth your time unless you find them funny, in which case, only give them a little bit of your brain space. You have better things to do, I promise.
There we go.
Thank you for listening to the nonsense. What non-Harry things are you looking forward to? Book, movie, TV, Rex? One non-Harry thing bringing you joy in these difficult times?
Okay, well, I know you said non-Harry related things like 5 times in that, but I'm going to say something Harry related anyway because I'm trash. So, like we said, we're recording this before the actual Fine Line anniversary. So I'm just really clowning and really hoping that we get something. Again, totally fine if we don't, but, you know, it would be great. But other than that, I trust people are aware that a whole new Taylor Swift album just dropped. I really liked Folklore. And so, yeah, I listened to it the night that it came out, and a couple songs on it stand out for me that I really like. So that is always nice. I really like, I'm not like a Taylor Swift stan, but I just love, especially in times like these, like moments of community where like everybody gets together to like fan over like the same thing. And it was just so fun to see like the entire internet be like, oh my God, a new Taylor Swift album. Like,
yeah.
And so, yeah, that's something that brightened up my week this week.
Yeah, I haven't listened to Evermore yet. It's on the list. I had time to listen to it today and then I didn't do it, but I will. I am getting happiness from embroidering Harry Styles' name in a font that has Santa hats on it. And I'm trying to watch a dumb reality TV show on Netflix called The Circle. It's very tasteless, but it has 3 gays and they're all stereotypes and I love them. So there's like a flamboyant gay guy and there's like a slutty bisexual girl. And then there's like a butch lesbian. So it's like all the gay stereotypes. And so I don't know which one to root for because obviously I want all the gays to win, but I can't have that.
As a bisexual, I'm rooting for the bisexual.
I know. I think I have no choice but to root for the slutty bisexual.
Yeah.
But the flamboyant gay guy, he does have my eye, you know. and then the butch lesbian, she's using her girlfriend because her girlfriend is feminine. It's this TV show where everybody has like these fake social media profiles so they can lie about who they are. So, like I said, I don't know who to root for. They're all great. But yeah, I am being tasteless like that. And yeah.
I love that.
So do you want to give us a little outro?
Yeah, sure. So you can contact us at weblameharrystyles@gmail.com. On Twitter, we can be found at @HarryStylesPod. You can follow us there. You can DM us there. Let us know what you think of the show. I had a great time recording this episode and I can't wait to like release our episodes. We'll probably release this one and our last one at the same time, considering how long it's taking me to edit the last week's episode. But yeah, let us know what you think of the show.
Subscribe to us on your preferred podcast host. And if you haven't yet, we want to spend a couple of minutes getting to know us and our point of view. Feel free to listen to episode 0. We're currently uploading our episodes via this app called Anchor. So your preferred podcast host, if it's not up yet, it will be up at some point.
Yeah, we're working on it.
This will also be on YouTube. Yeah, we're working on it. This will be on YouTube. You'll be able to access this, I promise.
Well, clearly you have since you're listening.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Oh, yes. Clearly you have if you're listening. But thank you for listening. We love you. Talk to you next time for our episode where we hopefully will be talking about something awesome we got this week for the anniversary or maybe something totally different.
All right.
So long.
Bye.
Louder. Lights up and they know who you are. Louder. Drum out.